Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Super Dan Anderson, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneer Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Tell them Super Dan sent you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Professor Gary Lee with the AMAA Masters Radio Show, where we interview some of the top pioneers and masters in the martial arts, not just sport karate. We're based upon the Sport Karate Museum, which is located in Sugar Land, Texas. And you can reach us at sportkaratemuseum.org, or you can call me personally, Professor Gary Lee, at gmail.com. We're also based upon the book, Who's Who in the Martial Arts. This is not just a history book. This is a book that was formed back in the 80s by Mr. Jan Warendorf and Mr. Bell Brooks. And they went after every person they could find in every state they could find. Well, it disappeared, and someone has brought it back. His name is Hansi Jesse Bowen, and he's taken it to a whole different level. Not only surrounded with the stories of people who created martial arts in America, but he's got the legends of pioneers behind him also. He also has a banquet, which I believe is in August. This year it's going to be on my birthday, August 4th. Okay? He also has some of the best seminars in the country. This year is featuring Mr. Dana Abbott, Master Swordsman, Samurai, World Champion, UFC, World Champion, the one and only Dan Sedlin, the best woman fighter by peers, magazine, critics around the world. Ms. Linda Denning will be there putting out seminars. And the queen. That's right, the queen of martial arts, Ms. Cynthia Rothrock, is making an appearance also. So, don't forget, find your date, August 3rd, and that will be the Legends, Who's Who in the Martial Arts event put on by Hansi Jesse Bowen, sponsored by the Who's Who in the Martial Arts. Now, if you'd like to get that book, you can actually go to Barnes & Noble. Go to our friends at Century Martial Arts. You can go to Amazon.com. That's right. And you can find out what this buzz is all about around the country, about this book. It talks about the history of people who created martial arts in America. Well, we're happy to be in your home tonight. This is our second year. And we've had the pleasure of having people in the studio that has changed martial arts in America. And tonight is no exception, no exception at all. This goes back, I want to say, 70s, 80s. Actually, I believe he came here in 1965. I actually have an introduction, which I'd like to read to my listeners right now. You know, introducing a personal friend and fellow competitor that was a triple threat in world sport karate. I'm talking about master performer Sonny Ono. He migrated to this great country known as America in 1965 from Tokyo, Japan. And after achieving his Shodan, Ho, that's a junior black belt in Judo, he took up American Jiu-Jitsu from Gary Johnson, who was a student of the legendary Peter Urban. And we'll talk about him a little bit later. Then as a young man, he settled in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa, and then he continued studying Goju under Chute Foster. He competed in the national karate circuit from early 70s to the 90s and was a champion's champion, setting standards in Japanese kata presentation. He was an amazing point karate competitor, and his kata was near perfection in technique and reality. His full contact career under the PKA and Mr. Joe Coy was exciting. He was fighting as a bantamweight in the early 70s and fought some of the good fighters I remember. He was fortunate enough to meet and study under old sensei Chuck Merriman, one of the greatest coaches of all time in sport karate, and was a legendary kata performer himself. Mr. Merriman gave Sonny a great opportunity to compete on one-on-one and be a professional on a professional karate team. Transwar Oiled and Atlantic National Karate Team. Sonny said, "They let us travel through the world competition representing America, facing world competition in fighting kata and weapons." He was also fortunate enough to be in the movie Black Pearl with many of his teammates, John Frenay, Chuck Merriman, Richard Plowden, and William Pickles. He retired from competition in 1993. Now, on the open market, to decide what he wanted to do, and an opportunity knocks on his door to work as an international consultant for Ted Turner's World Championship Wrestling. And out of pure talent and natural acting ability, and of course, with hard work, his talent kicks in. And the world is given an evil, evil man. Oh, that's funny. The evilness acting ability evolved into an on-camera talent as an evil Japanese wrestling manager. And then he retired again in 2000. Well, he now travels everywhere, and we caught up with him. That's right. He's on the road right now. And just through this cool interview with me, I'm so lucky. And we'll have an Unknown Parts live conversation with Dr. Tsunami, also known as the evil mad scientist from the Karate Whisperer cartoons that we created a few years back at the Sport Karate Museum. Enjoy this super interview, this fun session with my old friend and legend, a true pioneer and history general, Matt Sonny Ono. Sonny, are you there, my friend?
Yes, I am. I don't know if I can live up to that introduction, though.
Well, that's why I get paid the big bucks. You understand?
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. You
wow.
And me both.
Wow. Well, I got to open up with, before I bring you on and you tell me your beginning part. I got to tell you that I don't remember what term it was. I was trying really hard. It was either Atlanta, Texas, California, or somewhere in the Midwest. I competed against you, and I never forgot this. And this is a real cool story because you even don't know this. And you did a goju form where you take both your hands and you cross them. You probably know what I'm talking about. Of course you do.
Yeah.
And you bring it behind your head as if you're grabbing the back of your neck. And then you cross back across the front of your face, right? Am I correct?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So, anyway, that was the kata that you beat me with. And I just loved that move. And I remember asking Sid Campbell, who was my instructor at the time, I said, Uncle Sid, when I did the Psi form, which is interpretation of what you taught from Master Samura Shorin Karate, can I incorporate that move I saw Sonny Ono do? Would you be insulted if I did that? And of course, Uncle Sid Campbell, he goes, of course you can. So I incorporated that move into my Psi kata. Okay?
Oh, I'm honored.
Now, yes. Now it's 1993, and I'm at the USAF Nationals in Dallas, George Anderson's group. And I'm competing against like about 80 people, man. And I'm ranked, I think a fourth round seed. So all these people have done bo. And I call up Sid, Uncle Sid. And I said, Sid, I want to run the Psi kata. And Tomini no Ku with the bow. No one's doing that. But I want to incorporate that move. Again, I asked permission. I said, I want to incorporate that move. I looked at Sonny Ono. He said, do it. Well, Sonny, I took gold that day, bro. I became a national weapons champion in the USKF. And I never said thank you because you never know the story, but thank you.
Wow.
So,
you're welcome. My pleasure. I'm honored.
With that said, off my chest now, how'd you come to America in 1965? Tell me that story, and how'd you get involved in martial arts?
Yeah, my parents migrated. We had a family that was in the United States, my parents thought that we would have back those days I think every people that migrate into this country, we would have a better opportunity in this country, which was all true.
Yes, sir.
Certainly I made the most out of it. That's how I got here. But being a Japanese kid it's like, hey kid, show me that karate stuff.
Yeah.
So you're like, we were stereotyped, right? Stereotyped that we should all know martial arts. And because I studied judo when I was, because a lot of that stuff, there was a club and stuff in school that we did. So, it was pretty natural. There was no karate schools where I went, So I studied judo as you know, as a young kid, and finally found the Gary Johnson, who was the student of Peter Urban, and that's kind of got me started into Goju, and you know, rest is kind of history, really. You know, I was fortunate enough to surround myself and be associated with, you know, a great champion who helped me with all the endeavors that in the grand competition. You know, I had Gordon Franks, who was a national champion or world champion, who helped me with kickboxing. I had people like Heidi Ochai, who helped me with kata, along with Chuck Merriman. You know, those are the people that, you know, you hang around martial artists, you know, and some of that, even if you're just a kid from Japan, you know, all that great stuff rubs off on you.
Yes, sir. Now, I posted a picture of you, Sonny, which I found, and it's black and white. You tell us very old. How old were you then in that picture?
I have to have been like 18 or 19 years old, and I was in Alberley, Minnesota. When I was studying with Sensei Foster, who passed away real early on,
yes,
on a motorcycle accident. But yeah, so you know, that's and right after that, that's when I started really competing. I used to drive up to Minneapolis to train with Gordon Franks and Worley Brothers, you know, the Jun Rhee guys.
Young people, Larry Carnahan, John and Pat Worley, and Gordon Franks, and John Longstreet, Terry Norbloom, I can go on. Those guys are incredible people. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Those
good
are the group
people.
Of people that I trained with. And we did the circuit. As a matter of fact, that's where I met Eric Bischoff, who was one of the students there, who was managing the school there. And of course, Eric Bischoff and people in the wrestling world knows that he became the president of World Championship Wrestling. And that's
to the wrestling, because I want to talk about that definitely, sure, but I want to go back just a little bit, because this is parts unknown. I want to talk about some of the best competitors that you competed against, and some of the people that you mentioned in our pre-interview. Some of the people that influenced you in kata, and they helped you, like Heidi Ochai stuff. Now, here's the deal, Sonny. I want to ask you. When you first started competing, because you competed in Japanese kata, and a lot of people back then, first of all, you can't fake Japanese kata. We've talked about this before on my show.
Yeah,
you can't go out there and pretend that you know Japanese kata. So when you went out there in that time period when you were inventing creative kata and musical kata and against the mid-chat, but all these incredible people that were really great.
Right.
Japanese kata, you stood out because it was real. How did you do that, prepare for that as a competitor? That's what I want to ask you. Against all those great champions.
Yeah, my time of direct, I came right after like Heidi Ochai and Chuck Merriman and, you know, Miyazaki Sensei. And, you know, I mean, those are the people that I kind of look up to. So, you know, and none of those people use music. So, you know, so I want to kind of, and when everybody was, you know, trend was to, with John and George, you know, and Cynthia Rothrock and you know, Ernie Reyes and Gene and Junior, you know, they were doing all that music stuff. And, you know, and I wanted to kind of stay traditional, leave contrast to what they were doing. And so, you know, just train. I mean, you know, it's many of the things in karate that the people miss is that, you know, certainly Japanese and Okinawan karate is a lot of hips, you know, a lot of sharp hip movement, strong stance, you know, and those kind of things. Where, you know, other guys were doing a lot of high kicks although they're paying for it now, because every one of those guys probably had a knee surgery.
Yes. That's funny. That's funny. Now, I got to ask you another question as a competitor. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be ranking Japanese kata for many years. How do you feel about, you see today, people change to kata? change the form to manipulate the judge's view of being spectacular, I guess, in their eyes. But they changed the kata the way that was taught to you by your so-called instructor, sensei. How do you feel about that?
Here's my thing. Karate evolves, and certainly sports karate evolves. I think it's okay. I have a lot more respect for a person. You take somebody like even George Chung or John Chung.
I think you misunderstood the question, honey. I didn't mean comparing it to kata.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm just going back to those guys.
Okay.
Even though those guys who did those open forms, you know what I mean?
Yes. And they were incredible.
But they could also do traditional forms, you know.
Yes.
Kusanku, which is Pusan, those Taekwondo traditional forms. They could do that, you know. So
yes.
I know they were legit, right? So.
Absolutely.
When nowadays, you know, I've been to enough tournaments lately, and when people are doing their things, and you're not sure if they're doing a bow or they're doing a baton. And I understand they won't. But, you know, that's all depends on the judges, though. Judges award those things, and therefore, competitors are always going to do, you know, what they get awarded for. So as far as being flashy and being able to see it, I think it's okay. As far as for audience and stuff like that, but
okay. With that question answered, I want to go a little bit more deeper. Again, if someone came up to you and you were judging, say as a corner judge or even center referee, and he was performing Unsu or Jihan or Kakudai, and
right.
he changed direct movements of the kata, and you know that kata the way it was taught to you by your old sensei, and he changed it because he was trying to be more dynamic. That was my question. Would that bother
okay.
you?
Yeah. If he says he's going to do Kakudai and, you know, doesn't follow the pattern
okay.
and deviates from it, yeah, I'm actually going to penalize it for it, right? So if it's a traditional form and guy do a Basai Dai or Kansa Dai or, you know, Unsu or whatever, and he does something different and that or deviates from it, and then, he's going to get penalized.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you know, I got another question that because I love talking to you, Sonny, because I know that you're a really pioneering kata. And you know me, I'm a kata fanatic.
Yeah.
I was asked a few months ago by Mr. Young and Mr. Burke, Floyd Burke, the editor and assistant manager for Bible Magazine, to write my view about the Olympics in 2020. And I really emphasized the article on kata because I believe that, you know, the world has always seen the Kunlun Shaq and Taekwondo type of fighting, and whether they accept it or not, it's really kind of past tense. Now they're going to accept Karate Do into the Olympics. And they're going to be able to see real punches and real takedowns and real sweeps. But mostly, they're going to be mesmerized by kata, I believe. I believe that eventually when Bunkai is introduced, but just kata alone is going to mesmerize the world. How do you feel about that and having that introduced to the Olympics in 2020?
Well, if you look at JFK some of the tournaments, the World Karate Karate Do tournaments, I'm getting some feedback. Are you getting those? No?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. Then I'm not going to worry about it. Anyway, so, if you ever seen those, what they perform is a three-man kata where the three guy comes out and does a kata and then they go on to do the bunkai?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Yeah. And now, you know, I love that. Because they do their interpretation of Bunkai, right?
Yes.
I mean, I love that. Because they don't deviate from traditional kata. You know, they do, I think there's so many patterns that they can perform. under the organization. So, and you have to follow that pattern, and there's no deviation from it. But you can
talked about this before on my show for many, many times, where I've done interviews with traditional martial artists, whether they've gone to creative forms or not, is that it's based upon four basic functions in Kihan, which is the basis, Kata, of course, and then Bunkai, and then Kumite. And basically, if you do those four, and you're saying you're teaching Karate Do, you're not really executing those, you know, what Karate Do is about, I believe. And what's happened is that people don't understand when you break it down. And, you know, for the listeners who are listening for the first time, or old school guys who are listening, Kihan is all your basics, from yes man to no sir to opening the door for someone, you know, front kick and a reverse punch. That's your basics. And then you take those basics and you learn kata, prearranged movements from those basics. And those basics are formed into prearranged movements. And you have imaginary opponents that attack you. And then that bunkai comes in. That's the application of those movements turned into wazas. And the bunkai becomes beautiful because you actually see the application of the kata. And then you take those wazas and you turn it into impan. You turn it into kumite. And then that creates what we do now. But sport karate has changed so much and gone away from that. It bothers me, but I can't do anything about it. I just simply talk about it.
Like I said, I mean, if they want to change it for, you know, the open tournament has gone so far to one side, which is, you know, creative side, that, you know.
Explain that more than you get. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, they're basically, like I said, you know, if one of those guys who won the bow weapon championship, right? I'm just using whoever, okay? If he really used a real bow, he can't do none of that stuff. He won't be twirling. He won't be spinning. It ain't a baton,
yes, sir.
You know?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, and you know the real bow is, like, real heavy, you know?
Yes, sir.
I mean, and you try to snap those things, you know, I just strike. It's a whole different thing. So I think, I agree with you. It does deviate from the core of martial arts. I'm not saying what they do is bad, but, you know, they deviated so far to one side that, you know, if you reward that with a win from championship, then, you know, the people who the traditional karate is not going to compete against it because they're not getting reward for the application of the kata. And nor, you know, there's a thing that I wanted to tell you. There's a bunkai, and there's, you know, your sensei will tell you that, you know, I'm always amazed. There's a Taira sensei, who is a Goju-Ryu instructor from Okinawa, who comes to my student's dojo, and he'll show an application that it's not a normal application, and it's called Kimitsu, which means secret, right? He only teaches that to a certain student, you know.
Yes, sir.
Kimitsu means secret. So, you know, so there's those things that, I thought it was a block. Well, it's not a block. You know what I mean? There's a different application. It may look like a block, but it's not. And so that kind of thing. So those are the things that, you know, as you get, study martial arts and study Karate Do, and that, you know, you get to learn those things, the different application to a certain movement. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by that.
I've never actually studied hardcore Goju-Ryu, but I have many, many friends that are involved with the Nishi Goju heritage, and starting, of course, with the great Peter Urban and Wilfo Rodan and Charles Bonnet and Julio Limes and Frank Ruiz, of course, and this is an incredible Goju history. But my favorite story of Goju, and I want to share it with you, is that it's 2 o'clock in the morning, Saturday morning, well, I guess it's Sunday morning here in Texas, and then when I got the call from New Jersey, it must have been about 4 o'clock, and you'll recognize the voice. And again, this is out of total respect, but this is what I got to call at 2 o'clock in the morning from.
I'm not supposed to go with you.
And I go, who is this?
Dina Urban.
And I immediately thought it was a joke from one of my black belts or someone that was just calling me up early in the morning. And it was Peter Urban. And he had talked to Sid, Uncle Sid. And they talked about the Sport Card Museum idea that I brought together with Mike Stone and Vicious Sting and Ken Knutson and these guys. And he was calling me to talk about it at 2 o'clock in the morning my time, but 4 o'clock in the morning his time, right? And
nice.
Yeah, it was so cool. But here's the cool part of the story. He agreed to send me a book of his dojo, autograph it, and his original tree that he, you know, he wrote by hand, his family tree, and some artifacts and stuff were really cool. And so I said, sure, this would be great. And I hadn't received a whole lot of stuff yet. This was really 1998, I believe. It was 1998. It was right before he passed. So anyway, so I hang up. And I call Uncle Sid the next day, and I tell him I got a call from Peter Urban. And, of course, he knew about it, and he knew that he was going to call me. And I told him exactly what I'm telling you. And he said, he'll send that stuff. Well, Mr. Urban passes away. God bless him, he passes away. And so I just think that I'll never receive that stuff, and that's cool. I understand. But I'm sitting on my porch looking at the sunset, fall, sunny, and a UPS pulls up, and they have a box. And it's not a return address, but it's made to me in the Sport Card Museum. And I open it up, and guess what's in it, buddy? Autographed book of the dojo, the tree that he hand wrote himself of his tree, all kinds of papers and all kinds of cool stuff that I still go through. And I never knew who sent it to me, but I guarantee you that, you know, like the many things I've gotten for the Sport Karate Museum, it was another karate angel that knew about it and got it to me. And Peter Urban, God bless him, man. He took care of the Sport Karate Museum. And Karen Slatcher, you know Karen Slatcher, one of the old pioneers of martial arts? She had the original suitcase of his original suitcase full of his original papers of the original dojo, the book that he wrote. And she sent that to me, too. I have that in the museum. So, I know. I got some really cool stuff. But I had to share that Peter Urban story with you. But here's my fun part. This is the fun part. I get to talk about the evil, evil man that you created, the wrestling corporation. So tell me about how you met Ted Turner, how you met Eric Bischoff, and how it started, and what you created for television and the fans. It was amazing. Millions of viewers. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's a part of television. It's so amazing. I mean, 94 is the beginning of 1994. I was an on-camera talent. I started out being the international consultant to smooth out the business between New Japan Pro Wrestling and WCW, World Championship Wrestling. And what happened was Eric, knowing that I'm from Japan, I speak Japanese, he became, 93, he became a vice president of chief operating guy for World Championship Wrestling. And there was a guy who ran World Championship Wrestling before him who made a deal with New Japan Pro Wrestling and received something like $500,000 from them and to allow them, New Japan, to be able to use WCW talent. Well, he never sent any talent. He just took the money. So, and mind you, I don't know any of these stuff. So Eric calls me up one day and goes, hey, I'm going to Japan. Why don't you come with me? We want to talk to them about the kickboxing show we want to do. And, you know, just don't say nothing. I'll give you a kind of cue and you can come in and we can talk about the karate show. I said, okay, yeah, I'll go with you. You know, free trip to Japan is great. So we get there. And you got to understand the people we're dealing with. You have Sagaguchi, who is the Olympic judo champion, heavyweight, 300 some odd pounds. And you got Masa Saito, 1964 Olympic wrestler from representative of Japan, who also worked for Vern Gagne for AWA Wrestling up in Minnesota. You know, he's about 350 pounds. You know, he's had one of those lazy eyes, so you couldn't tell he was looking at you or, you know, he was looking at somebody else. But anyway, you know, so there's a bunch of meanest looking Japanese guys sitting in front of us, and they all look like they want to kill us. And I'm looking at Eric like, why are these people, you know, they're just like, I'm saying hello, and they're not responding, and I go, wow, there goes the Japanese whiteness. What's going on here? So then as I interpret, as the word is coming out of Eric Bischoff's mouth, telling the story about how he wants to hurt the relationship, more that they want to kill him. You know, I thought I was going to end up in Tokyo Bay, floating somewhere, you know. But we smoothed out that relationship, and one of the things they said after the presentation was, an opportunity, another chance, who is going to be our contact person in the office? And Eric says, without a skip and a beat, he says, oh, that'll be Sunny. And that's how I got my job. Then I started to bring the Japanese wrestler over next following year, and then but none of them spoke English, so you know they needed what we call them, and that's why you know I became the you got to remember the time, and this is the early 90s, so,
right.
You know, so Japanese golf courses right and left, if you remember, they had so much money then. It's kind of like where China is right now. They were buying everything here, and so I played that character, you know, who had more money than I needed. You know, we did an episode in Mount Rushmore, and where I was buying Mount Rushmore, and I was gonna put my face on.
I remember that, Sonny.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of yours, man. I followed you everything.
There. Yeah, they all got mad at me. Said, this is a national money. You can't buy this. I said, I said, in America, you. Which means the bad guy.
Now, did you get to create your own? Ideas? Did you write your own ideas?
Yeah,
come up
yeah,
with your own
yeah,
ideas?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, pretty much, you know, they kind of give us a perimeter and I manage the Japanese wrestlers and Mexican wrestlers, Chidor, mostly non-speaking talent. You know, so I was a mouthpiece for them. And then later on...
Who was your most prolific wrestler that you managed? The person that was the most well-known, the one that you really take a lot of pride with?
Even to this day, you know, Ultimo Dragon is the...
Okay, I remember him. Yeah, he's a tough guy.
He's really a world-renowned professional wrestler to this day. He actually competes.
Wow.
You know, I had a guy named Yuji Nagata who was the Greco-Roman champion. So we had him. I managed him. And because of my martial arts, I managed Ernest the Cat Miller.
Ernest Cat Miller, he was a great kickboxer.
Yeah, he competes on national circuit. He won. As a matter of fact, last year I think he won the NASCAR, you know, the 50 and over division.
And he's a nice guy too, man. I get to come to him in events and stuff. He's a nice guy, absolutely.
I don't know if you know this or not. On a dare, Ernest was promoting a Battle of Atlanta a couple of years ago, so he asked me to actually compete in Battle of Atlanta. So I competed in Battle of Atlanta after not fighting for 20-some years, 23 years, I think.
Wait a minute, I saw that, Sonny. You talked with Rudy Smedley, my friend from Texas, right?
Right. Actually, I hit the defending champion, two-time defending champion with a cartwheel kick at the end and won the match.
Saw that, Sonny. I saw that. Oh, yeah, that was cool. it was kind of went viral on the internet. People seeing you guys fight and stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What made
you come out?
Ernest talked you into fighting, huh?
Yeah, it was. You know, I was trying to help promote Battle of Atlanta, and Ernest was one of the co-promoter of the event. And so me and Eric Bischoff, who used to fight in Battle of Atlanta back in the day, and who's very known in the professional wrestling world, and so, you know, we said, okay, well, so Ernest, Eric was going to fight the heavyweight, hopefully win the heavyweight. I was going to fight the lightweight, and we were going to have this, you know, they always have the grand championship, right? So, and that would have made a big news in the wrestling world, you know, us fighting each other. So that was, that's what we wanted to do, but, you know, Eric, you know, flamed out before the event. So, and since I was already coming there, so I said, yeah, I'm going to fight anyway. So
that's cool. How old are you, Sonny?
So
how old are you now, buddy? How old are you now?
We're probably pretty cool. You might be a little younger than I am, but I'm 63.
I'm 63.
There we go. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Wow, you fought at 63. That's cool, man. That's cool. Well, you know, you mentioned about Atlanta. We got to mention Mr. Corley. What a first-class guy. You know, he's still right there in the limelight doing a lot of things. And he's, you know, I'm going to get him on the radio here pretty soon. And we're going to talk about the revision of the PKA and the things he's doing with that. But, you know, I got to say from the very beginning that I created the Sport Karate Museum, Mr. Corley has been there. You know, he uses the phrase, the power of one. I love it. And he is the power of one, you know, because everybody owes Mr. Corley, not just for the PKA, but just what he cares about, sport karate and the martial arts. I got to give him kudos, man. He's a great guy. He's one of the good guys. And you know what? Mr. Corley was a heck of a fighter. I did some research back in the 60s.
Well, I was there in 1970, I think it was 75, at the Battle of Atlanta.
When he fought Bill Wallace.
Yeah,
I was I've got pictures of him.
Yeah.
I've got pictures of him knocking people out. That's a true story.
Absolutely.
You know, kicker.
You know, dropping names. You know, I wanted to blitz like Howard Jackson, and kick like Michael Warren from New York.
I hear you, baby.
Michael Warren was most amazing fighter I ever saw. Coming out of that New York, the man could just jump up in the air and he was just a great athlete. Everybody talks about Michael.
All the pioneers, just like you said, they plug Michael Warren.
Yeah, Michael Warren.
He was like
Warren
an unknown because he was a traditional Taekwondo guy who trained with a traditional Taekwondo person who didn't really get into the limelight except for open tournaments. And, Michael Warren was one of the greatest fighters ever.
He didn't travel.
Exactly.
He stayed right around New York area. But, yeah,
absolutely.
Michael Warren was pretty amazing. I'm gonna take
a short break, and I'm going to bring you right back on. I'm going to do a couple of plugs, and I'm bringing on about 10 minutes. Well, less than that, probably about 6 or 7 minutes, okay?
Okay. All right. Good enough.
Okay. Just say listen now. Be careful while you're driving. Where are you going to, by the way? Where are you driving to?
I'm actually driving home. Then tomorrow morning I have to drive to Milwaukee. So,
okay, well, be careful. Okay, I'll be with you just a few minutes. Okay. Hey, everybody, we're on the air, and we're talking to Mr. Sonny Onda, one of the great pioneers, kickboxers, point competitors. Amazing guy, and who went on to become a world-renowned wrestling manager for the WCW and the Ted Turner Network, and we'll bring him on in just a few more minutes. Well, again, happy Valentine Day. If I haven't said it already, tomorrow's a big day for all the young ladies, and the ladies are part of our lives, and we want to wish you a happy Valentine Day and spend some time with your honey and do something nice for her. Buy her some flowers, get her a box of candy, take her out to dinner. And to all the martial art ladies out there, God bless you, and happy Valentine Day to you. You know, I got an event coming up on the 21st. It's not my event, but it's kind of my event because he's my friend. And he's actually a 6-degree black belt on me, but he's going to receive his 8th-degree black belt in American Karate on the J. Pat Burleson, April the 21st, in Fort Worth, Texas. And it's going to be a really special event. I understand Mr. Joe Corey's coming, Mr. Jeff Smith's coming. I mean, there's going to be quite a few people going to be there. to celebrate Mr. Jamie Cash in celebration of his 8th degree black belt. So for more information, just go to Facebook and type in Jamie Cash's special event, and you'll see all the cool people will be there April the 21st. Now, I want to share with you our event that's coming up September the 28th and 29th. It's the Living Legends 26 and the Living Legends Celebrity Roast of Mikey Roe Moore. Now, for people who don't remember, Mikey was one of the first top five women ever voted to be rated in American martial arts or American sport karate. She was also the Northwestern representative of Black Belt Magazine. She's one of the few people that received the Golden Fist Award from the incredible Mike Stone. Mikey Roe Moore is a very special person, and you'll see this because some of the roasters are coming in from all around the country, like Jerry Fandon, John Thibodeau. All kinds of people are going to say their incredible love and respect for this lady. Now, she also still represents the Sport Karate Museum. In fact, she just left California today, where she represents the Sport Karate Museum. Her and her husband, Dana, they travel all around the country just talking about what we do at the Sport Karate Museum. And I'm so proud of we're going to honor her this year in Houston, Texas, at the Hilton Galleria, September the 28th and 29th. Now, it's not just a roast. I mean, Living Legends is kind of like an event. It's a gathering. That's right. It's a gathering. You know, there's other people that are probably trying to say that word or use that word, but I'll be honest with you. I love the gathering of ideas. An event that I went through last year was put on by Mr. Mick Chamberlain, and it was created by Mr. Al Tracy. And, you know, I did. I asked Mr. Chamberlain, I said, could I call it the gathering, my event to bring all the living legends of sport karate together? And, of course, he gave me the blessing. In fact, he showed up, and he actually competed in categories. But the gathering, that is such a special event, and that's what's going to happen September 28th and 29th. We're also going to have something really special, a women's symposium on Friday. This is Dolly McPherson's vision of putting together women's power, the empowerment of women, put together a group of women, and we talk about all kinds of things, from gun control with Colonel Phil Flores, self-defense reality with Dean Piles. I mean, we're inviting the boxing commissioner of Texas, which, by the way, is a woman. That's right, a woman boxing commissioner. She's going to be invited. So we're going to have a lot of fun September 28th in Houston. And I'll top that off with a Legends Banquet Award, the Joe Louis Natural Fighter Award, the Dragon Image Fighting Awards. But to this year, we have something very special, and that is the Black Belt Tag Team Point Fighting. That's right, the Battle of the Sexes. Now, maybe you're thinking, well, Professor Gary Lee, you're not going to put a woman in the ring with a man, are you? Of course not. I'm not going to do that. But I am going to have the Battle of the Sexes. Tell you what we're going to do. The Sport Karate Museum is going to handpick four fighters that are men, four fighters that are women. They're going to create two teams of men, two teams of women. The two teams of men, they will fight each other. They'll be a winner. Two women teams, they'll fight each other, and they'll be a winner. Then the Sport Karate Museum will choose one man from that winning team and one woman from that winning team, and they'll form a team. They'll be the Sport Karate Museum team, which they're going to write, and then we're going to challenge America. If you got a man or a woman in 2019, you want to fight these two fighters, well, we'll be at the Living Legends 219, the same place, same adventure. So this is like a two-year event. We're excited about it. And what's really going to be exciting about it is, guess who the judges are going to be? The Jim Butens, the Jim Harrisons of the world. That's right. You're going to be judged. These fighters, these eight fighters, are going to be judged by the great fighters of all time. And by the way, you got to have 100 first-place wins under your belt or you're not going to be invited of that eight people. And also, you're not going to be a judge unless you've won over 100 first places in your career. Think about that for a moment. Never been done before. And it's tag team. That means you can tag team your partner within a 2-3 minute round. Cool. And it's the battle of sexes because we're putting women and men together, not fighting each other, but we're putting them together. So think about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to debut that September the 28th and 29th at the Mikey Roe Moore's Living Legends. That fight will be the showtime that evening. So you don't want to miss it. Well, I'm back with my special guest, Sonny. I know he's on the road. He's driving 5 hours, but he took some time to be on the phone with Professor Gary Lee, Parts Unknown. Sonny, are you there, brother? Sunny Dat Lucia. Sunny, you know, I was talking to Sunny just a few minutes ago, and I guess that he'll be back with us in a few minutes. Well, remember that we're also sponsored by some really cool people here, and that means people like Mr. Joe Cording. I talked to him about a little bit earlier, but he has a video system that he does that's really interesting. And what he does, he'll take your pictures and he'll put music with it, and he'll just format it so it's really something of 2018. And to find out more about that, you can contact Mr. Joe Cording on the AMMA Masters Radio Network, or just contact him through his Facebook account and just say you heard about it on the show and that you'd like to know more about what his video does. And I'd like to really emphasize that he did that this year for the Ishmael Robles and Troy Dorsey, Jimmy Tabaris, Matthew Black Belt Test of Living Legends. And it was just really a spectacular video that he does. It's only like 2 minutes, but man, it has a really power impact. Sonny, did you get back on yet? Okay. Well, you know, remember, if you want to up your game a little bit, whether it be your tournament or your event or something that you're doing, a seminar, call Mr. Cording and he'll help you with your video and put something out really positive. You know, another thing that I like to share with you before we go off the air tonight, you know, amazing thing down here in Texas. We've had an organization down here called the Amateur Organization of Karate. And this year, there was a couple changes involved. And the new president, Mr. D.E. Chambers, has asked to be involved with the Sport Karate Museum to a degree. So I thought about it a little bit, and I said, well, you know, I've got an idea. I'd like to run it by you. If you like it, then I'll execute it. And, you know, in 1997, I had the honor of working really hard all year and receiving the Golden Greek Award, which is the Amateur Organization's MVP of Texas. And it's given out from 1981. We lost the Golden Greek to 2017 last year, and it's still given out every year. But there's never been a gathering of winners ever. So I thought about it, and I actually put it on paper, and I submitted it to the Amateur Organization of Karate. And goodness gracious, they like my idea. They like my proposal. So it looks like December the 15th in Galveston, Texas, at the beautiful convention center, and working with the AOK and the Amateur Organization of Karate in their state championship, the Sport Karate Museum and Professor Gary Lee will sponsor the Golden Greek Reunion. So if you're listening to the show and you've won the Golden Greek from 1981, which, by the way, was Cynthia Benavides, Tim Kirby, and Rista Mackin, rest in peace. They were the first ones. If you're a Golden Greek winner between that era, 1981 to 2017, you're going to be invited to the Golden Greek Reunion. Special guest speaker will be Mr. Ishmael Robles, and the person who lived with Golden Greek and all the years of Mr. Kirby is back at the school, Mr. Dennis Scotcher. So it'll be a very special occasion. Well, I guess that we lost Sonny. He's on the road, but we did have a great interview, and we talked about a lot of cool stuff. But I promise you that we'll bring him back, and I'll see you guys next week. We'll have some great shows. Thank you for listening tonight, and look forward to seeing you next Tuesday. Aloha. God bless everybody, and thank you for listening to the AMMA Masters Radio Show. Aloha.